Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 5th, 2011, Cinco de Mayo. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, Desiree Knott from High Gravity in Tulsa talks to us about gluten-free beers. Desiree suffers from celiac disease, and she's working to brew beers that she can enjoy without worrying about any side effects. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can find our brewer's logbooks to help you log and track 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. On Facebook, I'm at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we appreciate your support greatly. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and BlackBerry users can find us on the BlackBerry podcast directory. It's only about a week and a half left for you to take part in the Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio experiment on glassware and how it affects the character of beer. All we're asking you to do is pick out some different glasses, put some beer in there, take a look at it, take a sniff of it, take a taste of it, take some notes, send us in your data. Thanks to Jonathan of Smith Falls, Ontario, and Scott Couet, our coffee expert, who is now from Detroit. Thanks to those guys for getting their data in early. If you've sent in data through a form and haven't heard your name just now, something's gone wrong. Send me an email. I hope we've got the kinks worked out in our online form, but let me know if we haven't. Of course, you can also just send an email with your results to james@basicbrewing.com, and that will work, too. If you're like me, you're procrastinating, but just don't forget, the deadline is May 15th. This Saturday is National Homebrew Day, and the American Homebrewers Association is encouraging you to observe the day by taking part in Big Brew. Here's what they have to say. What better way to celebrate the 24th annual National Homebrewers Day, an event recognized by the U.S. Congress, than to gather friends and family to brew a special batch of beer? For 10 years, homebrewers worldwide have celebrated National Homebrew Day with Big Brew, an event that sees more than 11,000 gallons of beer brewed at close to 300 different celebration sites. The local celebrations are tied together by shared recipes chosen specifically for each year's celebration. The American Homebrewers Association, which organizes the Big Brew celebration, selected three recipes for 2011. The first is a traditional English version of an India Pale Ale, which will be included in Steve Wagner and Mitch Steele's India Pale Ale, an upcoming book from Brewers Publications. The second recipe is also found in a Brewers Publication title, Brewing with Wheat, which is a very good read. Must be the season of the wit, based on Jean-Francois Gravel's recipe from Du Ciel Brewery. Hope I pronounced that right. It took Spanish, not French. It includes a special twist for Big Brew. AHA founder Charlie Papazian suggests that homebrewers add a special local adjunct of their choosing, such as flowers, herbs, or fruit. That's a good idea. Put your own little local twist on it. And lastly, dark beer lovers will enjoy Rocket Rod's Positively Porter. This recipe is chosen to honor Rod Romanek, who passed away in February and was a Homebrewer of the Year award winner, homebrew shop owner, Air Force veteran, and longtime AHA member. The AHA says, naturally, all this brewing will require some refreshments along the way, so at noon, Central Daylight Time in the U.S. on May 7th, homebrewers worldwide will raise their glasses in a simultaneous toast to homebrewing. There you go. Very cool. You'll find more info on the Big Brew and a National Homebrew Day at homebrewersassociation.org. And I hope the weather is good wherever you are for brewing purposes this weekend. It finally stopped raining here in Northwest Arkansas. Steve Wilkes and I posted an episode of Basic Brewing Video to celebrate a break in the rain this past week and to bottle our 100% wheat Belgian wit. And in that episode, we sent out our best wishes to those who've lost loved ones or property during the recent horrible outbreak of storms across the South. We had tornadoes and flooding in Arkansas and all across the South, including the incredibly massive twisters in Alabama and other areas. So I hope that this episode finds you safe and sound. If you're having rough times, I hope you get through them very quickly. And if you know a Navy SEAL, please buy him a beer. Now let's get on with today's business. A while back, I did an interview with some brewers here in Northwest Arkansas who were working on launching a brewery specializing in gluten-free beer. Now, they gave us some clues on the best way to brew gluten-free, but they didn't go into as much detail as I'd hoped because they were kind of protecting trade secrets. Well, as it turns out, I heard Desiree Knott from High Gravity in Tulsa has celiac disease and is working on brewing some good gluten-free beers. So I asked her to give me a shout when she was ready to talk about what she had found out and when she got her process down. So she did. Well, Desiree Knott, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, we're here in your beautiful home, drinking your beautiful beer. First of all, I guess we should talk about what we're drinking.
This is a gluten-free extract beer that I made with brown rice syrup and some specialty grains, sprouted quinoa, some sprouted rice, some buckwheat that I crushed and steeped, and then I used Chinook hops and Citra hops to make it taste like a real beer.
Well, it does taste like a real beer, and it does look like a real beer. It's delicious. It's lemony. There's a lot of citrus there, and it's I think it's great. Did you roast any of the specialty grains, or did you do any kind of extra preparation for those?
Well, the buckwheat was slightly toasted so that it kind of adds a nutty character. I think I probably could have used more buckwheat in this one just because I didn't get enough of that character that I was trying to get. But the others, I went to Whole Foods. I looked for sprouted grains, which to me means malted, and to make it much easier, and I just crushed them mixed them in with some toasted. I had some malted oats that we carry at our store, and used that to as my steeping grains, and worked out good.
Now, before we forget, you and Dave are the owners of High Gravity. Yes. In Tulsa, homebrew store, and the website is
highgravitybrew.com.
I always have to look because I do High Gravity, and that's not it. I can't remember what it is, but
that's
it's
right.
Not it. So anyway, wonderful shop, by the way.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your condition. We've done a show before on celiac disease and gluten intolerance, but that interview was with some people who were aspiring to be professional brewers, and they kind of held back on some of the trade secrets, and they didn't want to kind of give away the farm. I hope that you'll be more forthcoming. I assume that you will be. But tell us a bit about the condition. What are the symptoms? What are your symptoms? When did you find out? How did you find out that you had it and all that?
Okay, yeah, I was diagnosed around 4 years ago. Our store had been open for about 3 years, and I suddenly started breaking out in this very painful rash on my elbows and my knees, and it also would be in my ears and my hairline, and I had actually brought back some fungus-eating disease from Belize where we went on our honeymoon. So we were making jokes that I had brought back some terrible, skin. Everyone in the city of Tulsa was going to, have all their skin removed. And then after several visits to a dermatologist to try to figure out what the heck it was, they informed me that I had dermatitis herpetiformis and that I should avoid gluten. They didn't give me a lot of details past that. They gave me a drug called Dapsone to treat it, and they told me it was an antibiotic, and I thought, cool, I'll just take the antibiotics, I'll be cured. It's all good. So I took the antibiotics, ran out of the antibiotics, and it came back, and I went, well, that's not supposed to happen. So then I started researching and found out that it's just like 10% of the people with celiac develop this skin condition. And through more research, started seeing that a lot of the symptoms that celiac have, I have, I've had them for years, just thought it was normal. Your tummy always hurts, right? You know? Mm-hmm. So then I went to a gastroenterologist, and they've made the process of diagnosing very easy now. It's just a panel. They just take a blood test. It's an autoimmune disease. So you actually produce a signature antibody in your... There's things that they can test for now, so they know for sure if it's celiac. Mm-hmm. So they ran the panel, and they told me, yes, you have it, and I was devastated, and decided I better learn how to make gluten-free beer.
Yeah, I guess we should describe what gluten is.
Now, gluten is a protein, and basically it is a protein that is found in many grains. The one that it is absolutely the most prevalent in is wheat. It's very high percentages in wheat. But it is also found in other grains in slightly different forms. Rye, barley, spelt, almost anything that is an ancestor of wheat has gluten in it. And then plus also barley, rye, and I never can pronounce it, anyway, that has it too. And the body is just reacting to this protein. For some reason, it has decided that this protein is an enemy, and it attacks it. And your intestinal lining is very similar to the protein. And so what the body does is it sees the intestinal lining and it thinks it's gluten as well. So it attacks your body. And then that's actually what causes the damage and the bad effects. Mm-hmm. Which in turn causes stomach pain and stuff. So basically it's the protein, gluten, that's in the grain that is causing this reaction in people.
Is it something you're born with or something you develop?
Some children develop it at a very young age, and those children are deemed highly sensitive. If you have a celiac as a child, it's like a peanut allergy. It's dangerous. It's bad. But typically people start to develop symptoms in their late teens or early 20s. That's the typical time frame where it starts to, you know, rear its ugly head. Most people that are getting it, it's when they're adults, and it's going to occur in their early 20s typically. But it can happen earlier or later, but that's the typical time frame that it tends to hit. And there's a hereditary note to it. There's definitely some heredity there.
So are other members of your family, do they have the condition?
Well, my niece has just been diagnosed, and it looks like my son probably has it as well.
And I guess there are varying degrees of severity.
Yes, definitely varying degrees. There are some people where their tummy just kind of hurts. There are people that have what are called silent symptoms, where they actually really don't even know they have it. It's a highly underdiagnosed disease. 1% of the population in the United States has been diagnosed, but they are assuming that it's a much higher number than that actually has it.
Yeah, it seems like we didn't really hear about it until fairly recently, and I guess it's because of the testing.
Yeah, much easier to diagnose. It used to fall into other categories, you know, syndromes, when they put a syndrome at the end of a name where they really didn't know what you have. it was in that class of syndromes. So now it has its own name and everything.
So now it's easier to get research funding.
Exactly. Now that it has a name.
Well, I guess, you know, we joke, but I guess, you know, for some people it's can be, I guess, debilitating.
It can be very debilitating. I've talked to people with celiac where, you know, they inadvertently have Rice Krispies that has gluten in it, and they're in the hospital an hour later. Wow. You know, so, yeah, for some people it's life-threatening, and for some people it's a nuisance they have to figure out how to deal with. And I'm kind of in the middle of all that.
And the sad thing is that you are the owner of a homebrew store, and it's kind of like, you know, owning a candy shop and finding out you have diabetes or something. You know, it's
exactly. I thought it was a pretty cruel joke.
It's just a test for you to, you know, when one door closes, another door opens. So,
yeah.
You know, you are meant to be the, you know, the person who finds out for all the other people how to make good beer.
There you go.
So let's talk about your journey of finding gluten-free recipes. Where did you start?
Well, the first place I started was in our store. I mean, basically, you know, I know what a good beer is. And so I started looking at, you know, our specialty grains and the flavors that those specialty grains have and trying to see if there were other grains that might have that same kind of a flavor that hopefully I could impart on it. Looking for gluten-free recipes online, they were all incredibly simple. Get 6 pounds of sorghum syrup, throw in an ounce of Hallertau hops or something really basic, boil it for an hour, and throw on some yeast. So they're most of the recipes, honestly, they're just geared at getting you something that's semi-alcoholic and kind of sort of resembles a beer. And if you like Budweiser, if Budweiser is your beer of choice, there's a lot of commercial gluten-free beers that's the flavor they're targeting. So you can probably find one. Actually, Red Bridge is a very good representation of a Budweiser that's gluten-free. So if you like Budweiser, that's the beer for you. But I don't, so.
And I'll bet that's not our target audience here.
No, I don't think that's our demographic.
So where did you go from there? I mean, what if you don't like Budweiser, what are the other choices?
Well, luckily, Breese Malting has started putting some effort into gluten-free syrups. And so they make a sorghum syrup, and then they make a brown rice syrup. And the sorghum syrup and the brown rice syrup, they both have added dextrins into those beer so that it has the body. So it has the body of what a malt extract would have. So you can use those as a base for an extract beer. So that was the first place I looked. The first thing I did was I ordered a big tub of the sorghum syrup because that's what all the commercial beers are made with, is sorghum syrup. So I said, okay, well, I'll get sorghum syrup. And discovered that sorghum has this metallic aftertaste that it's kind of harsh, and it's like metallic. So didn't really enjoy the beers that I attempted to make with the sorghum syrup. And so then I went to the brown rice syrup, and I've done a few batches with the brown rice syrup, and it doesn't have that metallic character, so it seems to not conflict with the hops so much. So you can enjoy the hop flavor. It doesn't have this clashy battle going on with the hops. So that's kind of where the progression. I'm now on the brown rice syrup and just trying all kinds of specialty grains, you know, as to kind of add flavor and character to the beer.
Can you do an all-grain batch?
I have done an all-grain batch. We get malted oats at our store, and I thought, well, hey, you know, great head retention if I can make a beer with, you know, like 90% of my base malt being malted oats. And it turned out quite well. I was very thrilled with the all-grain. It had, I think because of the oats has a good flavor to it. So it had a lot more of a beer flavor to it. Huh. Now, the downside to malted oats is it's not certified gluten-free. So people that are extremely sensitive, you just don't know, because they're grown in fields right next to wheat fields. So you just have no idea what kind of cross-contamination has taken place. So a lot of people are very hesitant to use the malted oats, and I give a lot of caution to that. If you are in any way feel like you're too sensitive to take that chance, you probably shouldn't use the malted oats. Mm-hmm. But it's a nice, easy way, because they've been malted for you. It is extremely difficult to malt your own grain. It's almost not worth it, in my mm-hmm. opinion, to malt your own grain.
And so do you, I mean, it seems like oats would be sticky in the mash tun, or are they?
No, and actually they're not. They have, it seemed to me like they almost had more hull material than the barley did. They're smaller. So ratio-wise, there was a lot of hull material in there. I didn't have any problems with any kind of a stick mash. And I threw in toasted buckwheat, which has no hulls whatsoever, and I threw in sprouted rice and sprouted quinoa. And what else did I throw in there? I think those were the main grains that I threw in there to try to give it some character.
I guess I was thinking of rolled oats. I'd never used whole oats before.
Right, right. Yeah, and it looks just like malted barley, only it's oats. And the grain, actually, the oat grains look very similar to barley grains.
Now, we asked out there on Facebook and Twitter for questions. We got a bunch.
All right.
Which makes my job a lot easier. thanks to everybody out there for doing that, because you guys come up with awesome questions, some of which I might have thought of. Well, let's start off with probably one of the questions that was asked the most or referred to the most. Todd from Facebook says, are there enzymes or other additives that can remove gluten from a malt brew? So say if you have a standard all-grain beer, is there a magic ingredient that you can add to take out the gluten?
There are lots of fining agents out there whose job it is to get rid of protein out of your beer. I mean, that's the job. People don't want the haze, and basically the haze is protein, and so it's actually to the brewer's benefit to get rid of gluten. And so there's lots of, I mean, Irish moss actually gets rid of a lot of gluten just in the fact that it's helping protein drop out. If you want to get to more extremes, there's a product that's been recently made available to the home brewers. It's called Clarity Firm. It's also referred to as Brewer's Clarix. And it is specifically to break down the very small protein chains that are in your extract and your malt. So there's been some testing done on it, and when you're using the Brewer's Clarix, from what I've read and from what I've researched, and Charlie Papazian did an article on it, it breaks the protein down to virtually gluten-free. You could call it gluten-reduced beer. I mean, it's the parts per million were well under the legal requirements for Europe. So.
Now, does this have any effect on the body of the beer at the same time, or any other quality effects?
No, I've used it in several batches, and I haven't seen any difference at all as far as flavor goes or stability. Theoretically, it should improve the stability because it's removing protein, and protein is one of the things that hurts the stability of your beer.
And how do you use it?
You're pouring it into your fermenter as you're putting your wort into it. So I usually just pour it into the fermenter, and then when I'm running the wort through the immersion chiller, it just mixes up in as I add the wort.
So you can find that at fine homebrew stores.
Fine homebrew stores, including High Gravity.
HighGravityBrew.com. Joe from Facebook says, any comment on the ELISA tests for gluten-free beers being tricked by the Brewer's Clarix, simply breaking the gluten protein into small enough chains not to be detected, but keeping the concentration the same?
Okay, now from my understanding, and again, this is from my reading and my research, that when it breaks down those chains to a point where they are no longer detected, then they have been broken down to a point where they no longer can cause harm. Hmm. So even if they're still there, they're broken down to the point where they cannot cause any harm. So my answer to that would be that I don't think it's really tricking the test if it's actually been broken down to a point where it can't harm you. And again, that's from my reading. If you feel I'm wrong, you know, Desiree at highgravitybrew.com. Don't sue me.
Legal disclaimer. Proceed. Your mileage may vary,
that's
and
right.
You know, sample if you. I guess seriously, if you really have a problem, and you try a new technique that you're not sure about, take a little sip.
Right, right. And that was one of the questions too that I think we went over was, is there a way to test for gluten, a fast, easy way to test for glutens before you drink the beer? I mean, because some people, again, are extremely sensitive, and some people are moderately sensitive, and some people are just slightly sensitive. So if you are extremely sensitive, there is no way to actually really do a test. I mean, you can take your beer and you can send it off to a lab and you can have it tested, and they can tell you what the, you know, parts per million are, but there's nothing at home that is going to allow you to do that. So if you're extremely sensitive, you know, you need to decide based on your health and your condition, whether it's worth the risk to try a beer that claims to be gluten-free.
And there's no, you know, you can't drop some iodine in a, you know, some small sample and it changes colors, or there's nothing.
There's nothing that I'm aware of that I've seen that will allow you to do that.
And I guess we've already answered this, is sorghum syrup the only alternative to malt extract?
You have the sorghum, but you also have brown rice syrup. We've recently started selling that. I think it's a better product. It has more color. And it doesn't have the funky aftertastes. And there's several other things that you can use. You can use candy syrup. I mean, you just need to have something that's fermentable. You can use rice syrup solids as part of your fermentable. The problem with those is there's not any body in those. They're pretty simple sugars. So then you might want to get some maltodextrin, which is made from corn. So it's gluten-free. So you could get maltodextrin to add to the beer to try to help build up the body, the character of the beer, if you're using some of those simple sugar types. But like dark candy syrup would be a great way to get some darker character and flavor and caramel notes into your beer. Just, you know, just keep in mind that it's highly fermentable and it doesn't have a lot of dextrins there to give your... It'd be very thin if that was the only thing you were using as your fermentable.
So honey's okay?
Honey's great. Honey is awesome.
Yes. So you could drink meads all day long.
Oh yeah, meads are good. Yeah,
and
meads, ciders,
and wine.
And
I guess.
Wine, yes, mead, ciders, and wine. There's several alternatives. Unfortunately, I'm a beer snob and I'm a beer nut, and that's what I want to drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if it may be the best mead in the world, but it doesn't have the hops. Oh yeah, good. You could put the hops in the mead.
Yeah, you can. Actually, I've tasted some good ones.
Have you ever used buckwheat or chestnuts? And you talked about buckwheat or chestnuts as an alternative to sorghum. If so, any recommendations with those?
Well, now I've never used chestnuts, but I have used buckwheat. But I've never used buckwheat as a malted grain to get me my fermentables, just because I don't have the desire or the energy to malt any grains myself because I'm lazy. So I I'm not going to put that kind of effort into it, but buckwheats have an awesome nutty character to them that I think are very helpful to beer in general, just regular beers. I put buckwheat in regular beer. But I've never used them as a base grain. I've never tried to malt anything to use as a base grain. But I'd use them as specialty grains, not malted. So basically, you're crushing it for flavor. You're not getting any fermentables out of that one.
If you could use buckwheat and alfalfa, you could do an Our Gang beer.
There you go. That would
good,
be
you got that. All right.
I'll work on that one just so I can call it Our Gang.
Now, has your experience with these alternative grains, has it leaked over into Dave's, you know, regular beer brewing? I mean, has he done some hybrid beers with the stuff?
No. Except for the buckwheat. We've put buckwheat in a couple of the beers, but not really. It hasn't really transferred over. There are several of the grains that I think would be very interesting in a regular beer, but we haven't really had that opportunity.
Well, maybe after this.
There we go.
Joe says, and that last question was from Mike, by the way. I don't think I said. Joe says a lot of gluten-free grains are notoriously difficult to work with, either due to size of grain or water absorption. Can you recommend alternate ways for malting and or mashing? And we can strike the malting one.
Yes, strike the malting.
Or mashing that would help getting over these hurdles. Because so talk about this difficulties or the different challenges of working with those.
Well, the main challenge with those grains is that so many of them are very tiny. I mean, like amaranth, which actually is, when you read the description of what amaranth tastes like, it says malty character. So I'm like, yay, here's a grain that has a malty flavor, so I can try it. And the grains are like the size of, it's like one of the smallest grains in the world. Huh. It's like, have you ever seen millet? Mm-hmm. Millet, where it's like a centimeter, it's like half that size.
Wow.
It's like a half a millimeter thick. I mean, it's just very, very small. So they're incredibly difficult to work with as far as, you know, just because of the size. You certainly can't malt those at all. I mean, it's just, I just can't see how that would be possible. So, typically what I do, I crush them as much as possible, and I cook them. I cook them. I just consider it like a cereal mash. I cook them, which gelatinizes it, which makes it soluble. And then if you're going to use a significant number of them, mix them with rice hulls so that you get some depth there, something that's going to allow water to seep through it. Because right. The first time I tried it, it was quite hilarious. I had this big gelled mess, and I couldn't get any liquid through it at all. And I tried to do a steeping, like specialty grains, and it swelled up into the whole pot. there was nothing left. I threw it away. I said, well, that was one try. But yeah, mix some rice hulls in there, and it'll help when you're trying to strain some water through it to get the.
Now talk about how you did the cereal mash. I mean, somebody, you know, new to all grain or hasn't done all grain, or, you know, they may not know what you're talking about with cereal mash.
Okay, well, with the cereal mash, with cereal mashes, what you're doing is you're taking a grain that doesn't have its own enzymatic power, and you are cooking it. You're gelatinizing it so that it becomes soluble, so that when you mix it with something that has enzymatic power, those enzymes can work on the starches that are in that. In that grain that you're using, very common. Most people think of corn. There's a lot of people that do cereal mashes with their corn so that they can mix it in with their all grain batch to convert the sugars in the corn. And so I just basically do the same thing. Oh, I mix mine with toasted oats because that's malted. And so I made an assumption because there's not a lot of information on it that there would be enough enzymatic power in the malted oats to take care of the grains that I did the cereal mash on. And it was a very small amount. It wasn't a huge amount when I did that first test batch. And I did the iodine test, and it looked like all the starch converted. So then I did an all-grain batch where it was just, you know, toasted oats is the main. And it worked quite well when I did it that way.
Wow, it's interesting.
Go ahead. To add to that also, and I have not tried this, but theoretically you could do a cereal mash, and then you could just buy the enzymes that typically, you know, you have amylase and you have, help me out here. You have the alpha amylase and the beta. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they have those where you can just buy the amylase and see if you could mix that in with your cereal mash and see if that would break it down. I have not done that because I just use the malted oats.
Joseph said, I had a fellow brewer suggest brewing with converted potatoes for gluten intolerant drinkers. His recipe was essentially a potato wine with raisins, but I could see it having applications in beer making. Have you ever heard anything about this? And if so, tips? And he says, I've heard of brewing with sweet potato, but never as the bulk of the fermentables. Yeah, we've all made sweet potato beers. So what do you think? Potatoes.
You know, there was recently, and I use the word recent loosely, there was actually a letter to the Mr. Wizard and Brew Your Own magazine within the last couple of years. That was that very specific question. Someone wanted to make a potato beer. And he felt that there was no reason why you couldn't. And that during World War II, actually, it was tried several times because of the, you know, lack of raw materials and stuff. There were some breweries that actually, I guess, made some potato beer. So I'm not quite sure what the procedure would be, but I don't see why it wouldn't work. I think his only concern was that it might, there might be something in the breaking down of it that would cause a funky aftertaste, which is why he thinks maybe it didn't stick around. He did some historical research on it, I guess, when he answered the question on the Mr. Wizard question, but I thought it was fascinating. I don't see why it couldn't be done. I'm not quite sure what the steps would be to get that starch converted into a sugar.
Yeah, and again, you'd have to bring some, I would assume that you'd have to bring some enzymes in there at some point in some form or fashion to get that done.
That's what I would assume, that somehow you're adding some enzymes in there to help the starches break down.
How about using enzyme extract to improve the diastatic power of a grain like millet or teff? All these new words for me.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I'm not familiar with what the enzyme extracts would be to break them down, but surely they exist out there and could possibly work quite well. Your main thing to do to obstacle is the fact that these are tend to be hullless grains, and when you mash them, basically doing a cereal mash, it's just a big glob. So you could mix the enzymes in there, but you're going to need something like rice hulls or something in there that's going to help you get some sort of a filter bed so that you can hopefully get those dark sugars out of the mix once it's converted. I mean, that's the toughest part. It just becomes this big gelled mess when you attempt to you know, convert it.
Would brew in a bag help? I mean, it'd be a big glob. But, you know, would the fine nylon bag help in kind of squeezing the stuff out or not?
It might. I definitely think that you do need some rice hulls in there, though. Just because if you pick up a big glob and you try to pour water, it'll just lay on top of the glob and not filter through. So I just think you would need a lot of rice hulls. But the beer in the bag would probably make it much easier to deal with all that gunk. That is kind of left behind.
So is it kind of like a dough? Or what's the consistency?
It reminds me of a gel. It's very difficult to... It's not like a dough. It just reminds me of kind of like a gel.
Like a gelatinous, goopy...
Like a gelatinous,
kind of
goopy glob, yeah. Like
which would be a great...
From Steve McQueen.
Be a great name for a band, Gelatinous Goopy Glob. Steve Wilkes said he had no questions, but tell her I said hello.
Hello, Steve.
We had another hello in there, too. He said, tell her Kevin from Korea says hello. Pretty please.
Hello, Kevin. Kevin's awesome. He buys from us all the time.
Kevin gets a higher pitched hello than Steve.
Sorry, Steve.
Hello, Steve. There, I give it. Just so Steve won't be left out. Let's see. Justin says the enzyme referred to is Brewer's Clarex by White Labs. Is there an easy way to tell how much gluten is in beer? And we said no. But he said, is there a book with recipes and information? If not, someone should write one. Hint, hint.
Yeah. And I will consider that once I have more than two recipes.
Right now it's a pamphlet.
Right now it's a one page, you know, pamphlet. It is a good idea though.
Yeah. In your spare time.
In my spare time.
KG says before serving a reduced gluten beer, I'd want to have it tested. But are there kits? As with baking, I'd feel on safer ground with a kit to start with.
Right, yeah, and once I feel like I have made this beer a few times and it tasted the same both times, and you know what I mean, and I felt like it was a good beer to put into a kit, we will definitely put it in a kit form. The disclaimer out there is this is a homebrew store. We are milling grain in there left and right. And if you're, again, you need to know your situation. You need to know how sensitive you are, and you need to know how much risk you can take with the cross-contamination to buy a gluten-free beer kit from a homebrew store. There is that.
It's kind of like the thing where this product has been produced in a facility that also handles peanuts or whatever.
Exactly. Now, and I do state in there, like the specialty grains that come with the kit when we do have it available, we will suggest that they come up with a way to crush the grains themselves, because our mill, you know, is not, we're talking serious contamination at that point. So, you will be offered the opportunity to crush them yourself, you know, once you receive them.
And if someone has this issue, they probably may want to invest in a dedicated mill on their own, you know.
That's true. And so. Mills actually are not that expensive. I mean, you can get a nice a grain mill for like, you know, $129 or $119.
And where would they find one of those? I swear you're not paying for this interview. Although you do sell some wonderful DVDs as well.
That's right. Yes, we do.
Are there truly gluten-free beers or just very low in gluten? Some people with allergies are much more sensitive than others, James says.
There are definitely gluten-free beers out there. They're made with sorghum, typically. And sorghum is a gluten-free grain. It's not going to have any gluten in it whatsoever. There are several brands out there. You have Bard's. Bard's makes a decent gluten-free beer. And then you have Lakefront Brewing Company makes New Grist, which is a gluten-free beer. Just recently, I've discovered New Planet, and they have a light ale. I mean, they have like a light lager type, and then they have a pale ale type and a raspberry beer. Haven't tried the raspberry. Their pale ale, better than others, just because they've tried to make it more like a craft beer, but it still has the sorghum bite that I have a hard time with. But it definitely, you know, is not a bad beer. And then you have Greens. Greens is actually out of Belgium. They actually make Belgian-style beers. They have a double, a triple, an amber. They use Belgian wheat, so they get the Belgian funk in there, which helps disguise the beer pretty good. And they use millet and buckwheat and sorghum. They have like five different grains that they use in their beers. And their beers are pretty good too. And the way I quantify that is if you have a gluten and you haven't been able to have a really good beer in a long time and you drink a Greens and you like Belgian beers, you can tell yourself, this is a really good beer. You know, seriously, you drink it and you go, wow, this is good. Wow, okay, I can do this. But don't drink like a real beer within like a 2-week time frame or you'll realize you've been tricked. It's like the, you know, low-fat Ruffles versus Ruffles, you know. Once you have like a real Ruffles after eating the low-fat, low-salt stuff, then you realize that it's not really good.
And like the Olestra chips, there's not that terrible disclaimer on the back of the chip. Remember that? Remember what that said? It said like may cause abdominal cramping and loose stools or something like that. I'm like, yum, give me another bag. I'll just eat fewer of the regular kind. But it does seem like a Belgian triple or something like that would be a great, you know, it's a clear beer. It's relatively light in body and all that.
Absolutely, yeah. I would think that if you like Belgian beers, making gluten-free Belgian beers, you're going to be much happier with your results because, you know, a good portion of that flavor profile is from the yeast. You got the phenols and the esters and the fusel alcohols, all that stuff that makes a Belgian beer. And then plus, Belgian beers tend to be high alcohol with a lot of adjuncts, you know, sugars added to it. So they're light. A lot of them are very light anyway, so the body isn't so critical. So I would think that you could be very happy with making gluten-free Belgian beers if you like the Belgian beer styles, because the yeast just disguises so many things and tricks the tongue into.
And speaking of yeast, Brent from Twitter says, are there specific yeasts that you should or should not use in a gluten-free brew?
Yes, you do not want to use liquid. Liquid yeast, bad. Liquid yeast is in wort. It is in wort, so there's definitely glutens in there. Dry yeast. Saffel is considered gluten-free. Nottingham. The dry yeasts are generally considered gluten-free. So you would want to stick with dry yeasts.
Are there liquid yeast companies coming out with gluten-free alternatives that you know
of? Not that I'm aware of. No.
Might be a good thing.
That might be a good thing. I mean, it is a 1% of the population. That's 2 to 3 million people that you know, would probably like to drink a beer but can't. So,
and it's not like the a beer or yeast, liquid yeast packed in a gluten-free way wouldn't work in a regular beer, I wouldn't assume. So, I mean,
It would definitely, it would work in a regular beer, you know, as long as that, you know, what it's being suspended in is, you know, got the right nutrients and everything in it. I don't see why we couldn't use it for both. Yeah.
There you go. Let's see. Did we do all the Facebook? Let's see. I think we might have. Brandon says, how much gluten is actually in a regular finished beer? I figured that was either filtered out or not transferred over. And I guess the answer is that depends on the style and the brewer and all that.
It does. It depends on your brewing technique, the style of the beer. If you're making wheat beers, it's going to be much more difficult to eliminate all that protein from the beer. The amount of gluten that's in a wheat grain is significantly higher than a barley grain. There's a great article that is done by UC Davis professor, and he talks a lot about glutens in beer and the brewing process. And the brewing process really does break down a very large portion of the gluten that's in there. And if you're drinking a beer, especially a light style or something, a crystal clear beer, the chances of the gluten content being extremely high in those are much smaller. I have found that I can get away with drinking a couple of beers like that and not feeling any real pain. But I've learned just don't drink the wheat beer. I'm gonna be sick for a few days if I do. So it really depends on the beer that's being brewed and your brewing techniques and how diligent you are in breaking that protein down. But a lot of the breweries out there, if the laws were different in the United States, could call their beer gluten-free. Huh. I mean, there's several of them. One brewery just recently started stating that they were gluten-free, and it is I can't remember the name. It begins with the E-S-T. It's out of Spain. It's a Spanish or a Portugal beer. Oh. And it's a Pilsner style, very drinkable. It's got a good malt profile. And they state on their label that it's 0.05 parts per million or something like that. So in Europe, they can call themselves gluten-free. So they can't say that in the United States, so they have these little hang tabs off the bottle. It's not on the label, but there's little hang tags off the bottle that claims they're gluten-free.
Checks will not be honored. So that's a barley beer that they say it has had so much gluten removed that it's a gluten-free
beer. It's a gluten-free beer, exactly. And a vast majority of commercial beers probably could say that. Sapporo tried to do it as well. Sapporo tried to claim their filtering process and everything, but they had to quit claiming that in the United States.
Donald on the Twitter says, do gluten-free beers have trouble with head retention since that protein structure would be less or absent?
No, because I put malted oats in there, and oats make a great head retention. You could also, if you're highly sensitive to gluten, again, and you're trying to not risk any kind of cross-contamination, there are several companies out there that, like Bob's Red Mill, that has certified gluten-free rolled oats. Oh. And you could use those rolled oats to help with your head retention. They've been certified as not being cross-contaminated. So you could actually use those rolled oats as a... it's really no different than the rolled oats you're buying at our store, except that they've been certified as being gluten-free. So you could use those to help with your head retention.
And Mark asked two or three questions and said, sorry to bombard because his daughter was, but his daughter was diagnosed 2 days ago. And then he put a link to an M. Lewis paper. Do you know
that's
what
the article that I was referring to?
Okay.
Yeah, and it is a good article. He does an excellent job in that article of explaining gluten-free and the brewing process and how much protein is broken down. It's an excellent article.
So that'd be a good thing for me to link to,
yes,
in the description of this episode. Does high hopping from Mark? Does high hopping overcome shortcomings of sorghum syrup to an extent?
Yes. Yes, the high hopping will kind of hide that metallic aftertaste because hops sometimes are seen as metallic in their character. The bittering hops sometimes are when they're kind of harsh. You'll see them as kind of being metallic. So you can definitely, if you like hop bombs, you could probably disguise that metallic aftertaste quite a bit by making a very hoppy beer. Huh. I would think so.
Joshua says, I've noticed flavor stability issues with gluten-free. Any advice on making gluten-free beer that will keep?
My advice is smaller batches and brew more often.
There you go. Drink faster.
That's right.
Drink more.
One more gluten-free, people that need gluten-free beer and share.
Yeah, get a club together. No, seriously. I mean, you know, then you could have food that everybody could eat in an environment where everybody could eat, and you wouldn't have those problems.
That's right.
So we've covered a lot of ground. This has been very helpful and very tasty as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Is there anything else that you can think of that we did not cover?
Well, not really. I mean, the main things that I wanted to get across was, you know, the different kinds of grains that you can use in addition to the malt extracts. And the Brewer's Clarex. I think that has a lot of potential. Got an email from Norm. I think he sent it to you, and then you forwarded it to me. But he had a friend who hasn't been able to drink his beer in ever since he's made it. And so he made a gluten-free. He made a beer using the Brewer's Clarex, and it was just a regular beer. And he threw in the Brewer's Clarex. And his friend who hasn't been able to drink his home beer, homebrew beers, was able to drink a glass for the first time ever and not get sick. So that's a testimonial to me, because this is a guy who could not drink one of Norm's beers before without getting sick, and now he can. So to me, that indicates that it works.
Again, your mileage may vary.
Exactly.
No, but it would be interesting to hear from brewers who are gluten intolerant, who have used that product, to see if they, you know, what their success rate is.
Yeah. I put it in all of my beers now, and I feel it has made a difference. If I'm drinking my home brew, I feel much more comfortable and safer that I'm not going to feel bad later. Home brewing, it's one of the brewing techniques for home brewing are wide and varied, so it's difficult to get a truly gluten reduced beer in, with all these different, you know, brewing methods that are out there. Some people are really diligent, and some people, they're just like, oh, I'll throw this in, I'll throw that in, and, you know.
Which is why your mileage may vary.
Exactly. But so far with the Brewer's Clarex, I've been happy with it. I feel like I've seen a difference. But it would be nice to hear from other people.
And tell me your email address again.
Desiree@highgravitybrew.com.
D-E-S-I-R-E-E.
Yep.
@highgravitybrew.com. Well, Desiree, this has been fun.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your having me over. And you've got a really cool electric brewing setup there in your living room, and which is cool as well. You know, we may need to get together again and talk about that as well.
I was going to suggest that.
we're always looking for topics.
We'll bring Dave in for that. That's his baby. I think we've sold 150 systems so far. Yeah, he's very proud of it.
Very nice. Well, thanks, Desiree.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Desiree. And thanks to all of you who sent in questions via the Facebook and the Twitter. I'll post a link to that article that Desiree mentioned in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. So if you or someone you know is dealing with celiac disease, I hope that our conversation helps out. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our DVDs on our website, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. And our 2011 Brewer's Logbooks are still here. You can log 50 batches of brew with your logbook. I don't brew without it. We've got combo deals on our DVDs to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Soap Making the Natural Way, 45 Melt and Pour Recipes Using Herbs, Flowers, and Essential Oils. Very cool. And Proxon, 37160 KGS 80 micro chop saw. Watch your fingers. Remember, everybody, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate link on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.